Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, GEICO makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
Yeah, I was a heavy drinker, but I didn't recognize what the people closest to me recognized. I ended up laying flatlined on a hospital operating table. Somehow the surgeons brought me back to life.
When your life depends on it, there's only one place you can turn. Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
Welcome back. We are back after a week off. Cannabis Hour has reconvened with Javier Hasse. I still do not know how to say his last name correctly because I am on the phone with people all the time and I get Hasse. Javier, clear it up for me, probably the only person. You'll take them all. It's Javier.
It's Javier Hasse. And I assume yours is Elliot Lane.
Okay. Yeah, just Lane. Trip down Elliot Lane. Welcome back. We had a week off. We are back. I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday. If you are in the U.S., if you are not, I hope you had a great end to your work week last week and then a great weekend. We are pumped to be back. Thank you to all the pre-market prep listeners who are here with us. Javier, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. What are you thankful for?
What am I thankful for? Honestly,
put you on the spot.
I am thankful, you know, to be quite honest, that I work for a digital media company in the time where everybody was at home on their computers. That was a blessing. And, you know, honestly, none of this could be possible, like these new experimentation shows, without the audience that we have. So the listeners, thankful for you. Javi, thankful for you and for creating such a cool and awesome cannabis editorial squad. What about you, brother?
Oh man, so many things to be thankful for. I mean, thankful for working for a great boss like Jason Rasnick, who I'm sure is watching.
Brown noser. Sorry. Go ahead, please.
You know, thankful for the advancements we're seeing in cannabis legalization around the world, for you know the recent rulings at the UN. For the recent victories in several states in the U.S. in the elections, and thankful for, you know, my friends and family being safe, being sane, and of course for my home country, Argentina, finally regulating medical cannabis and coming out with awesome regulations that put patients first.
Amen.
So,
be
thankful for.
You put my thankfulness to shame. It's awesome. Okay. Well, Javier, I'm with you, man. You know, it has been quite the year. Honestly, the past few weeks for this industry have been pretty great. You know, I mean, great. is a pretty, I would say, subjective word.
Our standards have changed enormously during 2020. Like,
that's
one
great
piece of good news is enough.
Yeah, great qualifier there, Javi. But I feel confident, not confident, I feel happy after seeing some of the results the past couple of weeks. And I look forward to continuing to talking to executives and people who are in the space like we're doing today with three awesome guests, three very different guests. You know, to be quite honest, we don't have a theme to this show. I don't think anybody's going to mind. Because we have, I think, three very cool conversations, starting off with probably one of the leading investors in this industry. Who's first, Javi?
We have Matt Hawkins of Entourage Effect Capital. It's one of the leading investment firms in the cannabis space. They raised funds over $100 million. Now they're doing a new fund. I understand it's focused on distressed assets. And of course, you know, a big shout out to Cody Sanchez, who is also a part of Entourage Effect. And she is a member of the Benzinga Cannabis Advisory Council. We have Matt on.
Matt, welcome. How are you, sir?
Hi, gentlemen. How are you guys?
We're good. We are good. We are. Oh, man, your Christmas tree is putting me in
the mood. All right. So I got to tell you, I was told, I was like, hey, this is a laid back deal. You know, you guys are kind of, you know, laughing and chatting up. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to come down to the living room and show the Christmas tree. And I got the fire going over here. I mean, look at that. Huh?
Oh, where is my cup of cocoa, man?
Now I can put them both in the, I couldn't look at the video beforehand to position it right, but now I think I got it.
That's perfect. I need a cup of hot chocolate or some apple cider. Either one is fine with me, depending on what your tradition is. You are in the mood and I am there with you. That's awesome. But it's good to have you. It's been a year, man. It's been a couple of years, I think. And you've probably been, you know, deep into this more so than myself. Maybe I wouldn't say more than Javier. He's there with you. But real quick anecdote before we dive into you. The first time I met you, I doubt you remember this, was in Miami 2019, our first conference that year. I stopped you in the hallway because I was trying to be a good Benzinga employee and network with as many people as possible. And I was like, hey, who are you? You're like, I'm Matt. I gotta go. Have a great day. That was my first time I met you. And honestly, like, I didn't know what I was doing. So I appreciate you being so nice to me.
Well, it didn't sound like I was nice to you based on that.
Hey, man. No, you were. You were. Honestly, like, that's nice comparatively to, you know, to others. But my friend, it is good to have you on. How about you dive in? Tell us who you are. Tell us a little bit about Entourage and what you all are up to. Right?
So, well, probably 2019 was already 4.5 years into my investing time in this industry. And we started this in mid to late 14, raised our first fund. We were originally known as Cresco Capital Partners, and we got sick of being compared to Cresco Labs, even though we're friendly as heck with those guys. But we just said, you know what? We don't really have a connection. We're tired of being mistaken for them. And so we changed to Entourage Effect Capital about a year and a half ago. But anyway, we raised around, you know, $20 million or so in our first fund with other sidecars. And then we raised another 60 for fund two. And, you know, we've got a pretty large target for fund three, but we're actually having our first closing on it for a pretty substantial amount of money tomorrow. And so we've been spending the last several months, you know, stuck in our bunkers in COVID, raising a decent amount of money. So we're pretty, you know, the tailwinds that we feel from that, plus all the tailwinds I think that the entire industry is feeling, kind of gives us some hope and excitement moving into 21.
Absolutely. That's exciting. And honestly, it sounds like we all have some lessons to learn from successful fundraising in COVID times. So congrats to you guys on that.
Can you share some tips there? I mean, the people who watch us, many are raising money. Many come to us to raise money. So it's a little bit, you know, counterintuitive, but do share some tips on how to raise money in a difficult, you know, environment of capital constraint.
It's hard. Look, the reality is that, you know, and Cody is, you know, you mentioned Cody. I mean, she's kind of leads our, I mean, she and I are kind of the, you know, the front and center out there. I mean, I've got two partners, Andy Cerner and Dove Shapiro, and then Cody and Tiffany are also have joined us as managing directors and partners as well. Tiffany kind of runs our portfolio management, and Dove is really more of a strategic thinker, as is Andy, kind of heading up our M&A activities within our portfolio companies. But Cody and I are front and center out there, just meeting with virtually as many investors as we can. And it's hard. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. I mean, luckily we started this around this time last year, maybe into January. But then when March hit, we just shut it completely down. We really didn't pick things up again until August. And but luckily we were able to kind of get back into the, okay, well, let's re-engage with people that we had either met with face-to-face or were about to. And I also think that the tailwinds of the industry have helped us, you know, get to a point where we have our, you know, our first mile marker met. And it was our goal. We're going to get to that goal. I can't really, the SEC makes me shut up and I can't talk about anything anymore, but we're, suffice it to say, we've got a very large target that we're going after and we're about here with our first close. So that's good.
Yeah. Don't tweet about it either, Matt. You'll get in trouble.
I know. Well, luckily I don't even know. Go ahead.
You have a very international investor base as well. I don't know if you can talk about that or not. So like, just let me know before I go on with my question. Can we talk about that?
We do have a few European investors. We have a, you know, a lot of, Latin American investors and some Mexican investors, but a couple of Canadians, but it's still primarily a US based investor base. But we do, some of our larger investors are from outside the country.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So you said those three magic syllables, letters, words, we'll call them that, M&A, right? So it took a nosedive this year. You know, we chatted about this actually 2 weeks ago. So just kind of following up on that, in terms of M&A, what can companies do to kind of get your attention, in that regard? What can companies do to kind of increase the value and the likelihood of successful M&A in 2021 as we come out of the pandemic, as we go into a Biden administration, which we'll touch on, I think, in a little bit here as well? How can companies kind of transition into hopefully what is a much better year?
Yeah, I would say that first and foremost, the M&A activity should be focused on building scale, because to your point about the Biden administration and then all the other, you know, political tailwinds that we can talk about, it's all leading towards inevitable quasi-legalization, and it's sooner rather than later. And then we can talk about all the reasons why. I think the stats are 1 out of 3 Americans live in a adult use legalized state. 50% of Americans live in a medicinally legal state. You had the passages, you know, that we were undefeated with the green wave in November, and you know, Arizona and New Jersey are forces to be reckoned with in terms of market size. So it's all about building that scale. And if you can do it in advance of the legalization, when you've got the influx of institutional capital and big pharma and CPG, tobacco, you name it, all these companies are waiting for the NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange to open up. And when that happens, there will be a flood of capital. And guess where they're going to go first? They're going to go to the larger companies. And so our goal is to help our larger companies that we've already invested in that are either public or private, to get them to aggregate further. And then secondly, help our smaller companies figure out how to get ingrained with those companies. So to your point, I would say to the small to mid-size operators, no matter what sector you're in, is to find other companies in your space and put your egos aside and join forces. Because unfortunately, for the past several years, we've had operators that have had very, very large egos, and they won't allow valuations to be reasonable when it comes to putting companies together. And that's been the biggest impediment, in my opinion, on getting deals done in this sector.
Just one quick follow-up, and then I'll let Javi jump in here. You know, there seems to be a small portion of people that don't want federal legalization yet, right? There seems to be this, they think it's not good for the industry quite yet. Is there any insight you can give as to why that is? And do you agree into something like that?
There's obviously, I mean, for us, there's pros and cons. I mean, we want it to happen. Mm-hmm. Do I want it to happen tomorrow? Yeah, not necessarily. I don't think we need it to, because I think the industry would be better off if it didn't happen, because the more companies you can get up to here and that have built up higher, then the better chance those companies are going to be gobbled up by bigger companies and institutional capital. And then there's the trickle down effect of people, you know, making money off this is a good thing. If you legalize it tomorrow, there would be tougher build versus buy conversations with the folks that are coming in. And you really should, you want the industry to be at a point to where it's almost 100% buy driven, not build driven. And so that's kind of my position. It's probably not, you know, a lot of the traditionalists, you know, want it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And again, I understand that, but in order for everybody that's participating in the industry right now to be the most successful, I think the stair-stepped approach. Now, I don't want to, I'd love for it to be in two to 3 years. I think we really have shaved off a lot of time due to COVID and the need for revenue and all that. And that's fine with me.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Do you see the Biden-Harris administration moving in some direction? And if so, what do you expect, right? And we'll do a follow-up after.
Yeah. Well, obviously, if the Republicans control the Senate with the two elections that are coming up in January, or the two runoffs in Georgia, then I think a lot of it's just going to be, you know, Biden and Harris just being a little more vocal about their support for the industry at the White House. Mm-hmm. You know, the truth of the matter is Trump really didn't get in the way much. He just didn't say anything about it. And right. So I think the Harris, excuse me, the Biden Harris ticket. whoops. I think that they'll be they're just gonna be more vocal about it. Now, if the Democrats win the the runoffs, then you're talking about a different story. Then I think there's, you know, transformational things happen. But you know, we'll see. Mm-hmm.
And how can an investor prep for this, right? Like, what can we do as investors and as entrepreneurs to stay ahead of the potential outcomes, or hedge maybe some of our bets?
Well, I mean, to my point earlier, I think the reason why we're so bullish about raising capital right now is to get ahead of that and get out in front of it and put those chips on the table and make those pile of chips bigger than they were previously, to where you have that scale built and just make it more attractive for the next wave of people. I tell investors all the time, I mean, I challenge them to find me another industry that has a type of built-in exit like the marijuana industry does. I mean, it is undeniable that this is trending towards at least quasi federal legalization. It's undeniable at this point. Mm-hmm. It's you cannot stick the genie back in the bottle at all at this point. And with the number of states that are continuing to come online, that's just the next logical step. And so I don't know of another industry that has institutional capital and all these large companies just chomping at the bit to enter the game and are just sitting there like kind of waiting, like, to use a football phrase, in a 3-point stance, ready to hear the word hut and take off, because that word HUD isn't going to be said until that quasi-legalization occurs, or maybe even the Safe Banking Act passes, and who knows, maybe the NASDAQ, New York Stock Exchange open up at that point.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's going to be good for my brokerage account that doesn't let me trade OTC. just saying, I'm not going to say which brokerage, because they are also a client of mine.
Wing, wing, which brokerage?
Oh, I wish I could just say it. So, you know, I'd love to talk about, you know, the trends leading into 2021. You know, I have brought this question up several times on this show, so forgive me, audience, but I think having a person like Matt here to answer this is very valuable. When you look at, you know, what will be valuable post-legalization, is it going to be retail? Is it going to be vertically integration? Is it going to be do what you do, that one thing, really well? And then a follow-up question to that, what are things that companies and operators specifically need to have in their suite of products, if you will, to be successful? So like an e-commerce platform.
Yeah, that's a tough question. Those are two tough questions. I would say that, you know, the larger brands that have started to have some success in multiple states, I feel like we'll have, you know, kind of that best foot forward and have an advantage. And that also includes brands at the at the operations level, like the larger multi-state operators. I mean, clearly, you know, they're going to be the ones that are capitalized right now, and will be able to get even further capitalized upon legalization. So, you know, again, that's why scale is so important to us as a firm. To the second part of your question, you said e-commerce. I mean, that's a big one. There's no doubt about it. But I think it also speaks to, you know, just because this is going to be either federally legal or quasi federally legal, it doesn't mean product is going to be able to be moving between state lines. I mean, right. I think that there you can make a pretty substantial argument that all of these states are going to want to keep that tax revenue in their own states and not let it go elsewhere. And as a result, you're going to have something that looks a lot like the, you know, state by state liquor laws. So, you know, I think that it's a really, really hard question to answer. And it really just right. depends upon what the framework of what that, you know, legality looks like.
So maybe it is something to discuss state by state as they come online.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, hell, we've gotten really good at that because that's all we do now. So
fair enough. You know, I'm anxious to see kind of how New Jersey rolls it out, because that is going to open the door to where I generally live in New York. And I'm obviously excited about that.
Awesome. There's no doubt that New York will follow. I mean, there's just no doubt. It's going to happen.
Absolutely. So what's on the horizon for you guys? I mean, in 2021, we've talked about it. We've talked about a new fund. I mean, what's next?
I mean, we'll probably spend the majority of 21, rounding out the raise. It'll be, you know, obviously the sooner we can get this vaccine in here, the better, so we can, you know, people will be comfortable seeing what, spending time with us. I mean, I've actually had a few face-to-face meetings and it's been great. But it really, you know, like I think all of us in COVID, it's really about what makes everyone comfortable, and we're just respectful of that. And so obviously I think we're all going to have such a shot in the arm of enthusiasm, pardon the pun, shot in the arm with the vaccine, but then also the excitement of getting back into the fold, you know, with hopefully with, you know, industry events and mm-hmm. things like that. 'Cause I think we all miss each other, and, you know, and it's not just our industry, but I think the economy is really going to, there's going to be some real, real bullish movement, I think, if we can just keep things sustained long enough to where you're going to have a wave of enthusiasm just by people getting back out there.
Yeah.
Amen. So, and I think the cannabis industry is no different, and we're going to hopefully enjoy that ride and raise a bunch of money and make some, you know, we'll probably make 3 to 4, maybe even 5 investments in 21, depending on the size. And, you know, we're going to continue to grow our team, and it's just been a great ride thus far. We're going to continue it.
I look forward to seeing what those investments turn out to be. Awesome. So where can they find you? Where can our audience find you if they want to look into what you're doing, if they maybe want to reach out to you? What's the best way to do that?
Yeah, I mean, you can always send me a note to mhawkins@eecpartners.com. You can go to our website at www.entourageeffectcapital.com, or if you don't want to type in all those words, just go to www.eecpartners.com.
Easy enough, my friend. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Hey guys, great to see you both. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. Super jealous. All right. Fire. That's gonna have to be in my near future. I put it on my Netflix. All right. See you soon, Matt.
All right, bye guys. See y'all.
Bye. All right, Javi, that was fun, man. I love talking to Matt. You know, Matt and Cody have been great friends and supporters of what we do at our conferences, and ideally we'll be able to continue to have them speak. You know, they provide so much insight.
Yeah, man, he's a plethora of knowledge, as they say. And before we move on, we have very exclusive breaking news. You have not heard this anywhere else.
Right here.
This is the embargo lifting. Joe Rogan is launching a CBD beverage. It's called Flaming Joe, and it's launched in partnership with Killcliff. It's a clean energy drink maker. You had not heard before this. This is news. So, you know,
I'm obsessed with the name.
I don't know if you
name.
Can see my screen. You can see his screen.
Kill Cliff, Killcliff. Oh, Killcliff.
I think I wonder if the name Flaming Joe is a wink to The Simpsons or not.
You know, there, I feel like there's a lot of questions that could come out of that name. Regardless, that's a sweet logo. Super excited to try it. I'm going to call Joe, see if we can get some samples over to Benzinga. You know, we're good buddies, right? That's awesome. You heard it here. Benzinga, that's what we do, exclusives. That's what Javi does all day long, our exclusives. Follow him on Twitter, on Insta, El Planteo, Benzinga, Benzinga Cannabis, LinkedIn. You all know. All right, who's next, Javi?
So next we have Jude from Canafil. And I mean, bring him on, please.
Yeah, Jude.
A lot going on with the company, a lot since they last presented at the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference. So we're excited to have Jude share some of the updates and I hope a look into the European market.
Hey, Jude, how are you, sir?
Look at that background.
Hi, Javier. How are you guys?
Doing great. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me on again. I always enjoy being here and I always make a point of listening when I'm not attending. So
hey, I love that. Great
program. Try to be here every week.
Thanks for that, Jude. We're happy. We hope it's a good show every week, but having you on is always a pleasure. I'm excited to hear about Canafil a little bit more in depth. We've talked about it at our conferences before, but this audience may not have heard. So maybe if you could dive in a little bit about your background and Canafil.
Absolutely, I sure will. And in fact, I have some breaking news for the audience as well. Yeah. So, you know, a number of exciting things have happened since October at the Cannabis Capital Conference when we presented our pitch deck. And of course, it's still open for investor consideration. But since then, as I said, a few things have happened, which I find very exciting, just sort of the manifestation of a few goals that we've had for a while. So when we initially launched our signature hemp-infused topical cream in February at the USA CBD Expo, like everyone else, we had absolutely no idea what was coming. And the pandemic has really forced us to refocus our rollout away from a retail brick and mortar distribution model and more towards on, you know, we've focused now more on expanding our intellectual property protection and building out a really lean but expansive e-commerce situation, both through Amazon and through our own sites. So that's been our focus this year so far, but now,
any Christmas specials we can get?
Yes, you know, you can have the Cyber Monday special, which is CM50 coupon code at canafil.com for 50% off.
I'm writing it down. That's happening. You will see.
That's a big discount.
Yep, you will see Elliot Lane come through your box shortly. Off.
So anybody who's listening,
CM50. You heard it here. See, we give offerings too, thanks to Joe. Anyway, you go ahead.
Fill your cabinet now with all the best products.
And added value.
That was a bad joke.
Obviously, it's not your first and won't be your last. Jude, sorry, what's number two, Jude?
All right, no. So that's you know, we're one of the few credible hemp-infused brands that's distributed by Amazon, not just in the UK, but also, I mean, in the US, but also in the UK. And the product, the site, the advertising, it's all been approved by Google. So that gives us a lot of advertising flexibility that a lot of other hemp brands don't have. So we built this strong brand identity and we've got a really, you know, highly effective patent pending formula. And we have the most potent product on the market, but gaining market share in an unstable and overregulated industry with over 3,000 competitors isn't really, you know, and there are a lot of unskilled brands that are clamoring for attention. You know, that's not really, to my mind, the be all and end all of the cannabis infused topicals industry. And that's sort of laying the groundwork for where we want to go from there, which is, you know, our medical grade products are now sort of in stores and online, but that's all hemp based. So what we want to do is introduce a parallel product line in California of cannabis infused products. So we'll take our hero cream, our infused topical cream, and roll out a live resin-infused version in California in dispensaries, mm-hmm. both in the north and south of the state.
So this is products that you already have, the formulations, but you're just really implementing marijuana as opposed to hemp.
Exactly. So what we're doing is we're rolling out a parallel product line that's going to be all cannabis-infused products. So in order to do justice to the product's full potential, we've chosen to return to our roots with this full plant live resin topical lineup that's going to premiere in California. That's my home state. And we've established an office in San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury, just down the street from the cookie store, actually. And, you know, for years, California has served as an incubator of trusted cannabis brands with worldwide credibility. And we recognized that to stake out a leadership position in the industry, Cannafil really would benefit from being closer to the action, you know, and I'll be able to be more fully integrated into the California market development process as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Jude, real quick, I'd love to touch on a few things, if you don't mind. Yeah. Javi, feel free to interrupt me as well. Yeah. So, the Google ads, that's super cool. Did you find any obstacles with those? Because, I mean, even Benzinga finds obstacles with those when it comes to cannabis.
Lots of them.
So, how long did it take you to get approved by Google? Like, what was, you know, honestly, just a quick overview of that process.
Well, that took over 6 months. But I think we touched on that before together.
That's just about
you have to keep doing what they tell you to do.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and that's really going to pose some interesting questions as far as how we do market the cannabis brand. And that's one of the main forces behind this is our ability to market the hemp infused brand at the same time as we're running a cannabis infused lineup. So we can market both products essentially through the positioning of the brand. And that in turn gives us a lot of options that cannabis only brands don't have.
Yeah, that's awesome. So another follow-up question real quick. With your hemp and with your hemp products, you said you have one of the highest potencies.
Yes.
What exactly does that mean? If you could just kind of dive into that a little bit.
We think that's critical, and we think that the entire industry is going to have to move in that direction, because for real effectiveness, most of these topicals that aren't working as well as they should because they just don't have the amount of extract that they need to have in them to perform. So that's why we put 1,000 milligrams of hemp extract in every ounce. It's 97% plus CBD. And you know, and we still have it at the same value price point as a similar, say, you know, 1 ounce jar, but we make sure that we have the maximum OTC allowable in California, for example, within that 1 ounce.
Gotcha. Fantastic. So, you know, do you go state by state in your regulations? Because I know, you know, FDA doesn't necessarily monitor that. So kind of guaranteeing that to your customer base, have you found a way to kind of back that up, if you will? Does that make sense?
No, to back with
that. So to kind of guarantee that, if you will.
Guarantee the efficacy? The
potency. Because I know, with hemp-based products, there is that kind of...
Yeah, we have COAs available for every job. So every batch gets its own COA. You can scan it, you know, review the reports, make sure there's no heavy metals, no pesticides, no other contaminants. So that's available with every jar. So any consumer that wants has that information readily available.
Also, you guys have the best looking packaging.
Oh, well, thank you very much. We're actually going through a rebranding, which I'm very excited about. And that's sort of in anticipation of this new California initiative and then the other stuff that I have going on. But so we have distribution offers in place from a number of dispensaries in Northern California. We're talking to some operations in Southern California now about distributing through them. And so we're hoping to be on shelves in California by Q2 with at minimum, you know, 1 to 3 products.
So what's the deal with live resin, right? Why is it so hot right now? You know, what does it mean? Why is it better, you know, in terms of infusing topicals?
Well, if you want to go way back, I suppose, really, back when Cannafil was made on a kitchen stove, literally like 5 years ago, it started as a live resin product. You know, basically it was all handcrafted in the kitchen from scratch. So that meant that was always the intention. And as we had to scale things back, we launched in February in Florida in anticipation of Florida medical market becoming very different than it actually became. So we made a bunch of adjustments, a bunch of pivots, ended up in the CBD space, but where we've always been emotionally and intellectually is in that live resin space with the most natural products, sort of hand extracted or as close to that as possible to get the full terpene and acid benefits, you know, that is, you know, the entourage thing. And we've also added other terpenes and acids from complementary botanicals to enhance the bioavailability of the product. And I think that's another part of what drives its potency.
Fantastic. So before we, you know, get too far into this, let's jump into Europe. You know, obviously super interesting conversation. You said you were on Amazon in the UK.
We are.
Your CBD line though, right? So what, yes, what's next steps there?
The hemp line is available on Amazon in the UK, and we've been treading very cautiously as far as making that available in the rest of the EU via Amazon, but we certainly feel a little more compelled to make it, to accelerate that process now, given the recent EU rulings regarding France. And that, so that's sort of the whole process is accelerating because of our level of confidence that these regulations are going to get evened out pretty soon. And we're going to see, I think, a lot of market parallels between the EU and the US eventually. I think we're in a position now where we can sort of launch more forcefully into the European market. And to that end, we've begun negotiating with partners in Poland about crafting a hemp-infused lineup. Again, a parallel product like we do in California, do the same thing over in Poland. It's essentially a large licensing deal to create a hemp-infused product lineup that then can be easily distributed throughout Europe, or at least throughout the Schengen area. And at the same time, put us in a position to begin developing cannabis-infused products for the Polish pharmaceutical market. And because Poland's got such a great history in the hemp growth industry, you know, hemp growing industry, and they're relatively sort of consumer, I guess, relatively friendly laws regarding hemp and cannabis use, at least medically, we think that's a great place to enter the pharmaceutical side of things in Europe, as we do the dispensaries, for example, in California. So the idea is to model this expansion and replicate it in each of these states and countries as you're able to, whether that's, you know, Missouri or whether that's France, you know.
So, I mean, what's the landscape like in Poland? Can you share a little bit more about it? I mean, just, it's not a particularly popular market. It's not that people talk about it a lot. People always talk about Germany, maybe the UK, maybe a little bit about Italy or Malta, but no, what's going on in Poland?
Well, it's one of the largest countries in the EU. It has a large economy. It has a historically active hemp growth industry, industrial hemp growth. So there's been a lot of that. The growth industry is already in place, and they've allowed for the extraction of CBD openly, whether that's through novelty foods or through topicals. So it's been sort of an open thing in Poland for a few years now, in a way that it hasn't in most of the rest of the EU. And so as a consequence, the infrastructure to actually extract and create the products is already built in. And because of its position in the Shenzhen, we can easily distribute it then throughout the rest of Western Europe.
We spoke to a company a couple weeks back that was setting up in Portugal. And the idea there was that it was kind of an inroads to Germany, which they thought would be
Poland as well.
That's what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask, does Poland provide the inroads to the rest of Europe, like you're saying, and how does it do that, I guess?
Well,
I want to dive into that.
Germany. So, definitely the German market is an obvious target there. It does create that Europe-centric delivery that you need to satisfy.
Yeah.
And Cookies did a similar thing in Barcelona, opening up the shop there. You know, we're basically, they're just creating the presence, creating the market opportunity and the brand knowledge, and so eventually perhaps, you know, they'll get into their lounges and whatever, but for right now, it's enough to be creating a presence and then replicating that, I'm sure in other markets, I'm sure they have plans to go and replicate that in many places. So, it's an easy access point.
Yeah. And regionally, honestly, Poland makes more sense to me than Portugal, and, you know, in terms of access to Germany. But maybe I'm a little simple-minded there.
That's somebody sat down and made that decision, you know. But so far, the negotiations that we've had regarding Poland have been very positive. And so that's the direction that we're choosing to go in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's awesome. So, Jude, where can our audience find you? Can you tell us a little bit about, you said on Amazon they can get your products there. You're going to California with a marijuana-based line. Actually, when will that unveil? Did you mention the dates there?
Well, production starts in January.
Gotcha.
So I'm end of Q1 is when it'll start appearing in shelves. So I'm just going to say Q2 is when we'll start seeing it throughout California.
Beautiful. Let's get a trip scheduled to California soon, Javi.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. You can come visit the Hague. Yeah, so there's that. Oh, so I can be reached, obviously, and the product can be purchased at canafil.com. And that's where that coupon, the CM50 coupon, will get you 50% off. Or I can be reached at our toll-free number, which is 877-HEMP-420. So 877-420.
That's awesome.
Or by email Jude at canafil.com, and I'm always available there. So
I do have one more question for you.
Jude Elliott.
Is it about his surname? Please tell me it's about his surname.
His surname Bond. Jude Bond. I was kind of curious with once federal legalization comes in, there's those two beautiful words again. We're talking about a lot.
Yeah.
How do your lines work? Do they compete against each other, or does it come into a beautiful flower?
It dovetails wonderfully. No, and that is what I believe is going to happen eventually. I'm not a soothsayer, but it's the same plant. Eventually, it's going to have to merge those two industries. I don't see any other way around it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I was just curious because, I think it's brilliant to kind of start the move to California. I love what you're doing there, and I can't wait to try, some of your products. I'm in North Carolina, so, TBD on that one. Okay. But, I think I was just curious, if that's being, thought about in a company like yours. Does federal legalization really, is that part of the conversation for you guys?
Yes, and I happen to agree with Matt as far as the timing, pretty much completely as far as that 2 to 3 year window, where it allows brands to really develop and be at a position where once the full federal legalization takes place, where we can all benefit and from it, rather than it just being a top-down crushing of the industry from larger organizations.
Fantastic.
So I actually think this sort of hesitant approach is to the benefit of all of the smaller operators.
Yeah. Jude, is your packaging going to stay the same after your rebrand? Because I love your jars, man.
The jar is improving, but same jar, same European black glass, ultraviolet protection, new heavier boxes. And when we go to California, of course, we have to be child resistant them.
Gotcha. No, I'm glad to hear that, because I think you guys have the sleekest looking packaging out there, man. We appreciate you being with us, Jude. It's been a super awesome conversation. Thanks for announcing some of those items on Cannabis Hour. We are gonna replay this like crazy. And Jude Bond is greater than Joe Rogan.
I appreciate that. I'm gonna put that on the website.
Number one testimonial. Best one you've ever, that's as bad, as good as it gets.
Yes.
Yeah. Dude, we appreciate you, man.
I appreciate it. You guys have a great afternoon.
Yeah, you too. Another fun conversation. Wow. So he is expanding all over the place. His regions are, he's going two different directions, but very planned, very strategically. A lot happening for Canafil.
Yeah, man. And super interesting. I mean, generally, the European markets, I think, are particularly interesting and very often overlooked by North American companies. At the same time, many, many local companies are big there and we don't hear about them. For instance, we saw Will.i.am and Alyssa Milano invest in a Berlin-based company called Sanity Group just yesterday. Again, benzinga.com/cannabis.
They should be investing in Canafil.
They should invest in cannabis and Canafil maybe as well, right? and then the Poland market, that's a whole interesting concept. I haven't been hearing a lot about Poland, and
me neither, but it makes sense. Regionally it makes sense. You were saying that Poland may be a bit more conservative, but it sounds like they have been open to hemp extracts. So
yep.
News to me. I love learning things on these shows. I am interested to see how his marijuana line and his CBD hemp line kind of rise together. It's going to be, I think, a really cool, I would say,
relationship. I think there's a market for both. People looking for different effects, right?
Yeah. I don't know many companies that do parallel product lines. So So I think that's kind of a really cool undertaking, to be honest.
Yeah.
So let's jump into our last guest. I think there's so much to dive into with Jude, and love talking to him. He's so well-spoken. But we have one more amazing guest, Javi. Who is it?
We have Leah Thomas, the Greens girl, very famous on Instagram. She created a company called the Greens Girl Co. It's an e-commerce website, very much focused on minority-owned businesses, and a large portion of the proceeds go to funding minority-owned ventures and organizations advocating for legalization. So, Leah, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you all so much for having me. That was a lovely conversation before this to tune into.
Oh, thank you. We're happy to have you. This is going to be a lovely conversation as well. We're excited. So that's incredible what you do. That's really, really respectable. Obviously, an incredible business and something that's very needed in an industry like this that's so young and has a lot of room to grow. So in that vein, can you tell us a little bit about where this idea came from?
Absolutely. So my background is in like environmental justice, and I worked in the sustainable apparel industry at Patagonia for 2 years. And they did a lot of projects on hemp and regenerative agriculture. So I was just learning, you know, there. And then also I'm kind of a later in life cannabis user. And to be completely honest, like I grew up with a mother who thought cannabis was a gateway drug. So it wasn't until, you know, after college and actually after legalization in Southern California, recreationally, that I started to dabble, mainly because I don't really consume a lot of alcohol just for my health. And I was looking back kind of at my college years, and it seemed like a lot of students, I went to school in Orange County, so I was like one of the only Black people, but a lot of students, even before recreational legalization, kind of used it in a way they knew they weren't going to get caught. Like it was almost kind of this destigmatization, primarily for some of the wealthy and white students that, you know, even though it wasn't legal, that they knew they wouldn't face serious consequences. And that was really reinforced when I was a resident advisor in college. So I was actually the person that was kind of busting people for their drug usage. And even though it was legal, they didn't face, you know, ramifications. Even when we had police come to the college campus for people who were drug trafficking, more serious drugs, like they didn't really face serious consequences. And that just didn't feel right to me, I guess, that in Southern California, a lot of students before legalization, cannabis usage was already destigmatized for them. And they knew maybe they weren't going to face serious consequences. Meanwhile, a lot of Black and Brown folks who have been negatively impacted by the war on drugs, they don't get to have that same destigmatization that I think everyone deserves. So I think later in life, when I started using, I felt guilty as a Black woman in Southern California that I could partake in the cannabis industry, buy whatever I want, go shop at stores that feel a lot like an Apple store. Meanwhile, if I were in another state, you know, just 5 hours away, that I could be arrested, and that not only that, I would be more likely to be arrested. So it was kind of a hard switch as an environmental person, but because I already have sort of a following in the environmental space, I wanted to use that following and leverage people kind of, I guess, liking me and trusting me to get them to see, hey, I'm not the typical cannabis user that you might see, you know, plastered all over the media, and you all take me seriously. So it should be destigmatized. And how about I use this platform to advocate for restorative justice? And to be completely honest, there happened to be a local ceramic studio selling pipes, and we were like, let's make this happen. I wanted to have some sort of like mission associated with it and make sure that the whole platform was dedicated to destigmatization for all and restorative justice as well, in addition to, you know, selling a couple products.
So how is that transition from environmental activist to cannabis advocate, and how did your, you know, followership take it, right? And do they connect? Do you see any relationship between, you know, environmentalism and cannabis activism?
Absolutely. Even just conversations about regenerative agriculture, and there's a lot of conversations about like you can find the connections between environmentalism and cannabis, mostly just in the agriculture space. Mm-hmm. But how was that transition? It felt risky at first, I guess, because people are listening to me talk about environmentalism, environmental science, and then I was afraid because there's so much stigma associated with cannabis. But honestly, my following, they got it, and that made me feel really good. And I think when I talk about those disparities between Black and Brown and low-income communities, they just get it, because a lot of my followers know I'm passionate about social justice, and restorative justice is a social justice issue. And there are a lot of tie-ins with environmentalism as well. I think if I just popped up one day and was like, I'm selling pipes, like people would probably be like, what, why? But telling that full story, I think people kind of, they get it. And you know,
It was very well received. We covered the launch of the Green Squirrel on Benzinga, and then in Spanish on our site El Planteo, and Latino people received it especially well. You know, we got a lot of questions about it, and a lot of interest in the green Cannabis Innovation Fund.
Yeah, and you know, just one thing that I love about this is you started a business to help other businesses, and you know, I think it can be that way. You know, and I think right now, like, there's a lot of different ways we can grow social equity conversations in this industry. And it doesn't just have to be one way, you know, and I think you've provided a pathway to a totally different way to do it. And honestly, still provide yourself a career, which is also paving ways in its own sense. So, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, I'm kind of, you know, astounded at all this. it's pretty incredible. And so I guess just one question I have from that, you know, environmentally, how is cannabis doing? I mean, it seems like you would be a good person to ask. It seems like, from my limited knowledge, it seems like we have a long way to go there too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there are ways to grow any plant regeneratively. So with regenerative agriculture, it kind of, it goes one step above organic in that it's really nourishing the soil. So you're choosing to grow crops. Well, I guess it depends on how you're growing, and if you're growing actually in the soil versus hypothetically, if someone is growing in the soil, there are ways that I think a lot of cannabis growers can also sequester a lot of carbon. So with regenerative agriculture, the coolest thing about it is it can actually be a solution for the climate crisis, because if you plant in a way that nourishes the soil, it just absorbs so much carbon and it can actually reverse the impacts of climate change. So that's something I haven't really seen happen too much. There is, so Dr. Bronner's, they have a cannabis brand that is one of the first, I believe, regenerative cannabis brands. So they are finding ways that they can sequester carbon through the growth of cannabis. And I think that's something I'd love to see happen a bit more across the entire industry as a whole, especially as it expands, really focusing on soil health and how to sequester carbon in that process. But I'll have to learn about that a little bit more.
Yeah. I was just curious because you obviously have the knowledge for it, but you know, I think we hear the words organic and cannabis and everybody's like, that's cool. What does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, so I know there's a meaning to it, but A, nobody's really monitoring that or proving it out, you know, and I guess, again, two big words we're talking about, federal legalization. Maybe that's our theme today is what happens after it's all legal, which, you know, leads us back into what you do, you know, in terms of the e-commerce platform. What's next for you? In that.
Yeah, so I'll be working with Humble Bloom Co. They're really amazing. And they're really going to help me define the criteria for the Cannabis Innovation Fund, because I want it to be as impactful as possible. With my experience working in Patagonia, I'm pretty familiar with a lot of like 1% for the planet type things that companies have, but I want to go beyond 1% for the planet and really investigate ways to really create pathways for wealth distribution. So right now I'm starting at 5% of proceeds are going directly to the Cannabis Innovation Fund. And then quarterly we'll select, you know, nonprofits that we want to allocate those funds to. Another percentage is going to my organization that I run, Intersectional Environmentalists. And then I think the coolest thing that I like about the way the marketplace is set up, currently 50% of the funds also go to the small businesses. So it's not just about, you know, and obviously I want to make money, but I really want to have partnerships.
There's no shame in that. There's no shame in that. We are all in it to have a career.
And it's not like, I mean, it's like a goal, but I also want to find ways to partner with artisans that are doing cool things and have these like small capsule collections. That would be really fun.
No, like my jewels. I should find those. So there's a couple of things that you mentioned that all kind of tie together. You mentioned you worked in sustainable apparel. You mentioned you worked in Patagonia. Patagonia has recently announced they are launching a hemp fabric line. And also you mentioned, you know, sequestering carbon. And we do know that the production of hemp can be carbon negative if done right. So I don't know how we do all these combine. Have you thought of that? Like, have you thought of doing like a hemp clothing line, you know, to combine all these passions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, so what I want to do with the Greens Girl Co. is kind of like slow fashion, but for the cannabis industry. So with slow fashion, you know, it's done differently because it's sustainable and you're paying people a living wage and you're, you know, not releasing some huge collection, but there's these kind of like small capsule collections. So I think what I'll do going into 2021 is find people like I don't want to create a distribution center. So hopefully partner with a really cool like regenerative hemp clothing collection, and maybe I'll do a line of like 20 shirts or something like that, and kind of leverage my own personal platform to show people cool companies that are doing things right by people and planet. So I hope to have a lot of those little small collections along the way, and also show people that it's okay that I don't have some insane inventory, because that's not the best route to take anyway for the planet or really people. So yeah, I'm going to experiment with all those different things. And the cool thing about the collective is I can do what I want. So I can make like hats one day, I can do matches another day, especially because I'm partnering with so many people and just really building this collective.
All of the capitalists that are listening right now are so jealous, and they just cringed at what you just said. you simultaneously have envy and like, ugh, at the same time, but you're a true entrepreneur. It's so impressive. So you know, how can we support your site? What can we do to, can we go buy, some material? Like, what can our audience do to help support this initiative?
Yeah, so currently I only have one product, but there will be more that are coming in the future. And there will also be a way to donate directly to the Cannabis Innovation Fund, and more details coming out soon. So I think really you don't have to buy a pipe if you don't want to. Like sharing on social media, especially our resources about restorative justice, especially as legalization is spreading across the country. Legalization without restorative justice can lead to even more inequity in this space. So I think people just taking the time to educate themselves on restorative justice. And then if you all want to shop our marketplace, check it out, especially if you're looking to, you know, buy products that are supporting local businesses and also restorative justice.
Is there, really quick, do you see a particular state that's doing it right now, or doing it close to right? I hear Illinois sometimes, but, you know, just curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I think I need to look into that a little bit more. I need to dive into everything that Oregon just did. Like, I need to read. I need to get into the nitty gritty.
Don't we all?
of what's going on, because I heard... So I don't know if there's too much of a restorative justice component, but there's going to be funding going to teachers that I need to look into a bit more. But they have, I believe, did they decriminalize like every drug ever?
Psychedelics recently, yeah.
Psychedelics recently. So I need to dive into what they're doing to kind of figure that out, because I kind of like that pathway of treating drug usage overall as something like to provide people resources with, and not treat it as something that needs to be criminalized. But not off the top of my head. Yeah,
no worries. I was just curious because I don't know if anybody's doing it fully right, but I'm sure, I feel like Illinois, and I don't know, Javi, you probably have some insight into this as well. Maybe potentially our home state, Benzinga's home state, I should say, of Michigan. is doing some social equity campaigns, but
yeah,
look, certainly room for growth.
Like everything is easier said than done. That's a reality, right? And it's very hard to find a balance between justice and patronizing, right? And it's, I don't know, it's a complex issue. And actually, I wanted to ask something in relation to this. You know, you say your approach to legalization is intersectional. What does that mean?
Yeah, so intersectional theory was created by Kimberly Crenshaw in like 1989. Mm-hmm. And it really just explores the ways that we're dynamic individuals. So there's this quote that I love by Audre Lorde that I think sums up intersectional theory. Like, there's no single issue thing because we're not single issue people. So even if you're looking at like cannabis legalization, there's so many other things that you could be considering. Criminal justice reform in general, educational reform, healthcare reform, all of those things touch the cannabis industry in some way. So I think the approach to cannabis should be intersectional, where we're realizing, okay, where are improvements in the healthcare system? How can cannabis help people in the medical field in some ways? Also looking at education, also looking at social justice. There's so many things, you know, that we can look at. And I'm not saying that one person needs to do all those things, because intersectional theory can feel very overwhelming if you think, oh my God, I got to look at all these connections. But yeah. I think not denying that there are other issues.
It is. Everything is connected. And when people ask me why I love cannabis, I can't give them like one response, yeah. Right? It's not because just because I love the plant. It's not just because, you know, it's medicine. It's not just because legalization can fix, you know, a bunch of racial biases and things that we've had over the years. Not just because, you know, we can make it an industry that is more inclusive of women and females and self-identified, you know, people of different genders. It's like all of it, as you say, there's no one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, Leah, it's been an incredible pleasure to have you on. Is there a place, actually, I think you may have done this already, but can you reemphasize where people can find you?
Yeah, you guys can find me on Instagram at Green Girl Leah. That's my personal page. Also, Intersectional Environmentalist, and also the Greens Girl Co. There's a lot of green stuff happening, but yeah.
We love green.
We do.
That are good.
That's what we do. And we will definitely be following you, Leah, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon. But please, please keep in touch. Keep us updated. And best of luck in everything you're doing. We'll definitely keep following you.
Thank you. See ya.
All right. Thanks, Leah. Javi, fun show today, my friend. Three awesome guests. We do have an update. The coupon code for Canafil was expired when we announced it earlier. It is no longer expired. Jude extended it just for the Cannabis Hour audience. It is CM50, and it is now extended to December 31st for 50% off Canafil hemp products.
Get your holiday shopping on.
Like, I mean, that's a great deal. I'm just going to say, you don't get 50% codes off much ever, like for anything. So thank you, Jude, for that. That's super exciting. Javi, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Really love doing this with you.
Me too, man. Looking forward to our next show. Tune in next Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific for another Benzinga Cannabis Hour. Read our news on benzinga.com/cannabis. Follow us on social media. We're Benzinga and BZ Cannabis everywhere.
That's it. That's what we do. Benzinga's all over the place. Make sure you get our news. Thank you to our pre-market prep audience. Javi, thank you. Aaron Thomas, thank you. Everybody, we will see you all next week.
Just when I finish my to-do list.
We need more-
chips, Mom.
Honey, I need a lot of chicken.
Something else comes up. That's when I use Instacart to help get everything we need from BJ's Wholesale Club delivered right to our door in as fast as 1 hour. And then finally, I can relax.
Mom, I think we're out of toilet paper.
Time for another BJ's order. Download the Instacart app or visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first order. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum order $10. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.